good day to be in God's house. I'm glad you're here. You are a joy and encouragement to my heart. Help me find the way. And that whole sentiment of help me find the way, bring me back to you. I'm a bit at a loss for the words there for a moment, but that's the issue. You know, sometimes people don't know why they've lost their way, and they've lost their way many times because of the things that are right in front of them. I am afraid that today in our world that there are many people who are living in a rut of life because of the relationships that are within their very own homes. They've had a falling out. They've never been able to figure out how to bring themselves back into the zone of smiles, blessing, and joy. And so it is good for us throughout the month of February to give our attention to those things that have to do with the most important and most delightful part of life. You know, it's Ecclesiastes that tells us how to live. It's Song of Solomon that tells us how to love. And in How to Live, Ecclesiastes, he tells us that we're supposed to eat the fruit of our labors. We're supposed to rejoice with the wife of our youth. That is the gift of God, he says. That's what it's about in a word. Well, that would be a word, and this would be an exposition. Because the whole book of Song of Solomon comes before us shrouded, if you will, underneath clouds and darkness, because many of us have no way of figuring our way navigating through, because we're very, very unused to reading on this level, reading the Old Testament at all for many of us, sadly. And so when we come to the Song of Solomon, it certainly comes across as if it's allegorical and an enigma. And in fact, many people in our past history have talked about this book as being allegorical. Well, I want to suggest to you this morning, it is not an allegorical book at all. Sure, there are imageries used, but only to take care of dealing with the delicate things that have to do with male-female relationships. Imageries that are sometimes out of sync with our world, but are very powerful when you see them set forth in their proper historical setting, because people would have really evoked an emotional response to these images. But this particular book is a book, it's called the Song of Songs in verse 1. It is, in fact, the Song of Songs, as this is the book of books. It's the song above every other song. Why? Because what makes a man sing? What is the story in the songs we hear today? The ones that move us. Usually, it's those love songs, that remembrance of young love, that remembrance or hope for love in the future if we're young. The things that light us up are male-female relationships, and what happens as the years go by in the Christian world is it ought to be getting better. You know, we think, well, I got married, I'm moving on. She asked me if I love her. I said, I told you I loved you when I married you. Why do I need to say it again? And that's sadly true in many cases. We don't tell our spouses and our loved ones how much they mean to us. Well, when we look over Solomon's shoulder and we see him dealing with this Shulamite girl who was down in a garden nearby his place where he grazed his flocks, we see him beginning to enter into that zone of interaction that we all just kind of take the savor of in movies and in songs. And so when we look at this book, I want to suggest to you out of the gate, number one, we're going to be here all month on this book. So if you want to get a good handle on this book, be with us, okay? Number two, I want you to know it's not an allegory. Do not relegate it to something that is not able to be understood except by the scholars. It's not about that. God never wrote anything but that he wanted it to be understood. He was communicating to us something very profound, and not the least of which is the Song of Solomon, which is the Song of Songs. You got the whole book of Psalms, which is full of songs, but this stands alone in its own right. Song of Songs. So what I want to suggest to you is, it is a book that is made for application, and it is a book that is set out in a chronological fashion. It, in fact, brings before us several vignettes of the relationship of men and women. It starts with courtship, and it ends with that journey of the older couple walking along, leaning on one another. It's a beautiful picture. So don't miss it. And then try to take the things you hear here and internalize them enough to where that in the future you'll be able to take other people and introduce them to principles in God's Word about how it's supposed to be. So let's begin verse 1. It says, the Song of Song, which is Solomon's. It says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Now it starts right out of the gate and we think, wow, man, cutting to the chase here. But what you have to realize is what this is the Shulamite. There are several players. Primarily, you're going to have three in number. You're going to have Solomon, you're going to have the Shulamite, and then you're going to have the daughters of Jerusalem, because no girl walks around alone. They always walk in packs when they're in the real world, okay? They always have 15 other people. I need to go to the restroom, the whole room clears out. You know, they're all going. And so she has the daughters of Jerusalem who are her comrades, her friends, and who are all about her success and her delight. If they would have had, they might not have been hanging out so much, but because they didn't, they had to be up close and personal because they had stuff to say and talk about, all right? So these are your three players. The first one that speaks is the Shulamite. Her mind says, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Now understand, she's not saying this out loud. This is a heartthrob. She's seeing him, she says, well, what a dream this guy is. She sees Solomon out there in the vineyards and in the fields, and she just thinks he's the hottest thing that ever walked on two legs, and she's just thinking in her mind, let him kiss me, and let it be me. Let it be me. Now there was a day when maybe you remember those kind of feelings. If you're older, if you're younger, you may have experienced them. There's just this awe. It just is a rapturous thing. It catches us up. And God meant it to be so. And we need to, out of the gate, remind every one of us that God was the author of this story. That this is not something dirty or obscene or pornographic. It is something hugely awesome. And God means it to be exciting. It's what gives zest and vigor to your life. And so when you begin to enter into this zone of marriage, courtship, seeking, whatever, a marriage partner, understand you want to do it right, because if you do it wrong, as the tree is planted, so it will grow. All right? So this is our little paradigm. We can say this is what we need to do. This is how it should look, at least in some sense. And when she starts out by saying, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth, what we're seeing is she's telling us what it looks like to be in the assessment stage. You remember being in the school and you were looking across the room and you were always, every time you walked into a room in the classroom, you always looked to see if you knew anybody, first. Second, you looked around to see if you wanted to know anybody. And you know what I mean. It's just the way of the Creator's design in us. We walk in a room, we look for friends, we want somebody safe, but then we look around and think, man, maybe there's somebody in here who knows. You know, it's always in the backstory. And in this assessment stage, she has found somebody, and she sees him, and she's been looking him over, and she's convinced this guy's all right. Because in her assessment of him, she sees something in him that makes her go so far as to say in her heart of hearts, let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. Now, folks, there's a lot of people who want to do that for just pure lust. The guy's cute and the girl's beautiful and that's all they think. But not this woman. This woman goes deeper. She's not about that shallow, carnal kind of assessment. She goes beyond that. She says in verse 2, for thy love is better than wine, which has an intoxicating and a luxurious effect. And in verse 3, she says, because of the savor of thy good ointments. And what she's talking about, she quickly defines, she says, thy name is as ointment. One thing she's looking at the very get-go is his character. This woman is about his character. The first thing she wants to know is this a good guy? Is this a man that is a good man? And when she has looked him over and assessed the condition and the situation of this man, his name is as ointment poured forth. Whenever his name is entered into a conversation, people have nothing but good to say about him. He is a good man. Now that's what gets a woman's attention. Just for the record, it's not about what color your hair or your eyes are or what you're wearing or how cool you can dress. And certainly those things are initial impressions. What really gets a woman's attention is the character of the guy, or it ought to. Unless we're caught up and poured into the mold of this world that tells us it's all carnality, it ought to be about character, because what she has at risk is huge. Has her own personal happiness at risk, because she basically brings herself into a position where she's going to have to submit herself to somebody, and this guy's got to be somebody you can trust. So she's thinking, character does he have? And she explains why she's gotten convinced to the point where she's willing to let herself float. She's willing to let herself fantasize about being kissed by this guy. And it says in verse